have this idea about buying a ranch and creating a place for first responders to go, to just blow off steam, to relax, to be able to just get away. The biggest compliment I got was when a first responder walked in here, he goes, "Oh my God, I feel like I'm at home." And so the third initiative that we're looking at are creating American Ninja Warrior style gyms where they can actually go in and train on how to do some of these crazy maneuvers that they are called upon to do in their service. And so that was kind of what started this whole advocacy. And the more I learned, the angrier I got.
Welcome to another edition of Responder Resilience, along with my co-host Bonnie Romali, LCSW EMT. I'm David Dashinger. On this episode, we'll be speaking with Catherine Seferins Avery. She's the founder and executive director of the Restoration Ranch Colorado. About the ranch, its Valor Vacation programs, and health and wellness initiatives for recruiting and retention in Colorado.
This episode is made possible by Cover, an all-natural military-grade mineral sunscreen lotion. Providing broad-spectrum protection in an SPF 30, Cover blocks 97% of harmful UVA and UVB rays, but is light enough to allow your skin to breathe. First responders often spend long hours in the sun, and prolonged skin exposure is one of the hazards of the job. First responders love Cover because it won't stain clothing, and the 4-ounce bottle fits easily into a backpack or go bag. Go to kovr.respondertv.com to get 15% off all Cover sunscreen products. That's kovr.respondertv.com.
Please like and subscribe on YouTube, Responder Resilience Channel, Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc., and Responder TV, PBSRadio.com, all the podcast platforms, and go to our website, ResponderTV.com, for past episodes and guest information. We'll be right back to speak with Catherine after this.
In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job. In this family, up to a quarter of 911 dispatchers have symptoms of PTSD. In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis while responders are quietly suffering. In this family, many struggle with job-related stress, burnout, trauma, sleep disruption, substance abuse, and marriage problems. In this family, we can help the helpers. With vital information and resources, resilience strategies, and success stories of overcoming the obstacles. In this family, no one is alone. Welcome to Responder Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacy Raymond, and Bonnie Romali, LCSW EMTB.
And today we're joined by Catherine Seferins Avery. She founded the Restoration Ranch Colorado, which is a 501c3, in 2021. She used her own funds to purchase and renovate a 40-acre ranch where dispatchers, first responders, emergency department personnel, and members from the judiciary and their families can come for a day visit or an overnight stay. Catherine created the ranch to give back to those that selflessly serve the public in circumstances that can be unimaginable. And I mentioned those two words, recruitment and retention. I think those are probably one of the top challenges facing the first responder community. So I'd love to get into that at some point. But Catherine, welcome to Responder Resilience.
Thank you. I have to tell you, listening to that intro put a lump in my throat. It really did. It captures so beautifully all the issues that we're facing, not only here in Colorado, but across the nation. So beautifully done. Really like that.
Thank you.
We're so happy to have you, Catherine. And before we get started, I have to say to our listeners and viewers that I had the pleasure of meeting Catherine in person a month ago. I visited the Restoration Ranch, and I was so captivated by her story and the ranch that I really wanted to bring it to all of you. So if you hear a little bit of a connection between Catherine and I, there very much is one, and I can't wait to ask her questions. And really, I have a picture of the ranch in my mind, which is really unique. We don't often get to do that. So thank you for being here. It means a lot to us.
Oh, it's my absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Welcome. So can you talk a little bit about why first responders? Why this mission? Why did you start the ranch?
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about that because I'm a civilian. My husband was a civilian. And on December 4th of 2020, Chris was on his way to go pick up groceries because we were in the middle of COVID. We were expecting another lockdown. And as he was on his way to go to the grocery store, there was a robbery that was being committed not far from where he was. He was at an intersection. The light turned green and the fleeing robbers hit his car at almost 80 miles an hour. And Chris bled out at the scene. So it was a situation where I knew something was wrong because he should have been home in 20 minutes and an hour went by. And then I thought it was Christmas shopping and then I was mad at him. And but I knew something wasn't right because he wasn't picking up the phone and he wasn't answering text messages. So I started doing my own little detective work. And after about 2 hours, I called the non-emergency number, talked to a lovely dispatcher. She patched me through to a gentleman who I spoke with and said, hey, my husband should have been home hours ago. And I'd heard sirens. I'd heard the helicopters. I was just like, but hadn't put it all together. At 3 minutes after 2 o'clock, I was out in my garage working on a Christmas lighting project. And at that point in time, literally my whole body shook. And that was when I thought something happened to Chris. And like everybody else, I dismissed it. It was like, no, he's fine. He'll be home in 20 minutes. But the more time went on, the more concerned I got. And this was as a civilian, I didn't know what I didn't know. For example, I didn't know that they couldn't tell me that there had been an accident. I didn't know because Chris had passed away that they were processing the crime scene for every shred of evidence that they would need to prosecute the individuals who were involved. I didn't know that that was going to take 8 hours for them to do. So again, in my blissfully ignorant unawareness, I was just kind of like waiting for him to come home and getting more and more worried. Finally, it started to get dark and I thought, I really should go and see if he's in the parking lot. My husband was a big guy. He could have had a medical emergency. So I went to the grocery store and I literally went up and down every single row, didn't find the car, and then went to the pickup place and said, did my husband come and get the groceries? And they were like, no, he didn't. And then I knew. Then it was like, he's in the hospital, but if he's in the hospital, they probably would have called me by now. But if he's dead, that ain't going to happen. So I called again back the non-emergency number, talked to the gentleman that I talked with before. And, he's like, thank you for that piece of information. And then I went home and waited. And I had a friend who was a therapist that I was talking with. And, she said, do you want me to come in over? And I was like, yes, please. So it's about 8 o'clock at night and I'm trying to find my cell phone to see if I can get a location on Chris's cell phone to at least know where that is. And there's a knock at my front door. And I open the front door and there are two police officers and two other women standing there. One who was a victim's advocate, the other one was coroner's representative. And they said, may we come in? So, in my head, I heard you better be sitting down. So I walked over to our island in the kitchen and sat on one of the stools. And the first words out of my mouth were, is he dead? And they said, yeah, he is. And we're so sorry. It was a traffic accident. And literally, it's just like in the movies, which surprised me. Every word after that was just wow, wow, wow. I couldn't hear anything. My brain was overloaded. And fortunately, my friend walked in right behind them and immediately started taking notes and writing down information because she could see I was in shock. And one of the officers got a phone call, went into our office, was gone for about 20 minutes, came back and said, I can finally tell you what really happened. And they had just concluded processing the crime scene, so he was able to release details. He told me about the robbery and the high-speed chase, that the police had suspended the chase when it became obvious that it was too dangerous, and that Chris never saw it coming. He was literally looking straight ahead when he was hit. We know that from surveillance footage from a convenience store on the corner. And by the grace of God, I did not watch the news that night because they were running that footage and I would have watched my husband die on TV. So Again, this is something when people are talking about, why aren't they releasing the names? Why aren't they telling us what happened? There are very good reasons, but the general public is unaware of that. So that's one of my missions in starting Restoration Ranch. I couldn't go to our house in Maine, which was actually the first act that I did, because I had three defendants and three trials to go to. So I called the HR department of the Lakewood, Colorado Police Department, which was the primary agency handling the case. And I said, how do I donate time at our house in Maine to your agents? And the response was, we have no idea. Nobody's ever asked us that question before. So I was going to, this is interesting. So anyway, they called me back a couple of days later and said, well, it can't be a direct donation because that's a bribe and then we could put you in jail for that. I was like, no, thank you. So it was determined to donate it to the FOP. So they came and met with me and their representative was a lovely man. He's now a very good friend. But when he first met me at the Starbucks where I was talking about this idea, literally his first words were, what do you want? And I was like, what do you mean? What do I want? And he's like, no, what do you want? I said, I don't want anything. I want to say thank you. And he looked at me like I had five heads. And so we went through the mechanics of how this would happen. And then I said, and I have this idea. And I should backtrack a little bit because before that, how the idea came about actually was not just that my interaction with the Lakewood PD, but on Chris's birthday, April the 26th, he died December 4th, that following April, I took food to all four roll calls at the Lakewood Police Department just to kind of say thank you for doing this. The day before, a 14-year-old boy had stabbed his mother 30 times, including through the skull. He is talking in graphic and uncensored language about what happened. I'm in the room. He has no idea who I am, and he's just like spilling it. And I kept on asking myself, why is he here? I don't get this. So I asked command staff, why is he at work today? And they said, well, you know, he doesn't want to sit at home by himself and think about this. He may or may not be ready or want mental health counseling. And there's no other place for him to go. And that was when I went, wait, whoa, this is really wrong. So that was what led to the idea to donate the time at my house in Maine. And then as I talked with the FOP rep and said, hey, I have this idea about buying a ranch and creating a place for first responders to go, to just blow off steam, to relax, to be able to just get away. And hopefully de-stress before they need to de-stress. And he looked at me, he said, there's nothing like that. And I said, and I want it to be for everyone in what I refer to as the traumatic event life cycle. Because again, as a civilian, you don't understand that it's dispatch, fire and EMS, law enforcement. Then if, you know, they go to the hospital, there's the emergency department personnel and the other, you know, hospital staff that take care of them if they survive. And then victims' advocates and members of the judiciary, as well as their families, they're all traumatized by the work that these people do. And I had no idea about that. I was recently at a charity golf tournament and had a member of the judiciary, a judge, come up to me and say, nobody has ever done anything for us. And you're right. We experience vicarious trauma going through these trials, looking at evidence. Nobody thinks about us, but you did. Thank you. Blew me away. So that's how it started.
Our deepest condolences on the loss of your beloved husband.
Thank you.
You know, beautiful that you've been able to transform that loss into something very positive. And you know, love to find out more about what that looks like. What did you do when you decided to create the ranch in Colorado? Like, what was that process like? What was your vision of it, and how did it actually unfold?
This is one of those. So my board keeps on telling me, Catherine, when they do the made-for-TV movie about this, nobody's ever going to believe the plot twists, because it was like, yeah, it really did happen this way. So I initially started looking for ranches up in the Estes Park area. My family has a great affinity for Estes Park, and my dad in the summer of 42 had actually cleaned cabins up there before having to go register for the draft in Fort Collins for World War II. So there's a longstanding history with my family there. I couldn't afford anything up there because the billionaires in Aspen who have pushed all the millionaires out, those millionaires have gone up and bought up everything in the Estes Park area. So I was like, okay, what am I going to do? And one of the things I do for a living, I do design work and home staging. And I had staged a 40-acre ranch for sale 7 years ago. And I thought, oh my God, that ranch is perfect. So the next morning, you know, I woke up in the middle of the night with this, oh my God, I know where it is. So I called the realtor and said, whatever happened to that ranch that I staged for you? And she said, we pulled it off the market. I was like, what do you mean? I said, it hasn't been sold. She's like, no. I said, I'm buying it. She's, for what? And then I told her what I wanted to do with it. She burst into tears and I'm like, oh my God, what's wrong? And she's like, well, I've never told you this, but my husband is a former police chief and what you are proposing doesn't exist. We need to have it. I will do anything I can to help you buy this ranch. So we come up and we meet with Bert. I mean, he's this wonderful old cowboy. He's in his early 80s, just, you know, fun guy. And I tell him what I want to do. And Okie's bawling her eyes out and I'm bawling my eyes out. And he's just sitting there with his hands folded across his chest. And I'm going, this is not going well. So he's like, you haven't even seen the property yet. And I'm like, yeah, I know. And I'm just, so he's like, well, come on, let's get in the gator. And so he takes me up to what we refer to as Moose Meadow. And it is an absolutely beautiful meadow with a notch between the mountains that looks down to the city. And I just burst into tears. And he looked at me like, what? And I was like, I get why you don't want to leave. And I said, this is a beautiful place, but Bert, you will always be welcome here. I know that you know you're close to the end of your life. You've always wanted to have your remains buried here or scattered here. I will make sure that happens. And I will also make sure that your children have right of first refusal if for any reason I would want to sell the ranch, which I don't anticipate. Well, on September 11th of 2021, the 20th anniversary, he agreed to sell to me. We signed the paperwork on Veterans Day. I bought the bought the ranch on March 4th of 2021, 2022, excuse me, I'm getting my dates mixed up. So a year ago, bought the ranch, started renovations the next day. We were open on June 3rd. We had our first overnight guests in early August. So this is kind of like a runaway freight train at the moment. But then I hit the wall. Okay. So as David mentioned earlier, I used my own funds to buy this place. My dad, who had had dementia and had lived with Chris and me before Chris was killed, left me an inheritance. Chris and I have no kids. And I thought, what am I going to do with this? You know, buy myself a Ferrari and go be a cougar? I don't think so. So I was like, what do I want to do with this? And I just thought, I want to give back to all of those people who were with Chris when he took his last breath. I couldn't be there. They were there for him, and they are there for thousands of other people. This is my way of saying thank you. And so I took the inheritance, and I spent $1.25 million to buy and renovate this place and to staff it. It's me and Kat Patterson. That's a whole nother story. But anyway, in August of last year, nobody was coming. I mean, we had like a guest here and then 3 weeks and nobody came. And I was like, there's something really wrong here. And did I literally make a $1 million mistake? So I started digging. And that was when I discovered, oh, it's not that people don't want to come. We are so short-staffed in Colorado. And then I learned as I did more research nationwide in our emergency response personnel that they can't come. And when I learned that overtime budgets often exceeded regular budgets, I was like, whoa, this is insane. We got to do something. So that led me to go to the Colorado Director of Public Safety, a wonderful man by the name of Stan Hilke, and say, I want to tackle recruiting and retention using health and wellness as a platform and make Colorado number one in the nation for doing that so that we can create a sustainable model that other states can emulate to encourage more people to come into the field and, more importantly, to keep those who have the experience and expertise in the field to train up those new recruits, because there's a huge, you know, there's a huge drain that's happening right now, not just with people leaving because they're burned out and because of the social circumstances over the last 4 years that have changed everything. I was just like, no, if people understood how dangerously close we are nationwide to you dialing 911 and there being nobody to come to your call, it would curl their hair. It just would.
You know, I'm sitting listening to you, and I'm remembering all the other initiatives that you are working on. Could you talk a little bit more, not just about the ranch? It's incredible, but you've been doing so many other pilot programs. I'd love for you to tell our guests about that.
Absolutely. So as I was saying to David, I'm a problem solver. That's really what design work is. We solve problems. So it's a natural, you know, transition for me to take that skill set to helping first responders. And I should say that, you know, there are some people who are still extremely suspicious and skeptical of me and my motives. And I get that, because for a civilian to step up to the level that I have, some people say I'm a unicorn. I'm like, yeah, I wear that horn really proudly. So, but yeah, we do have a bunch of other initiatives. I read an article in Psychology Today that was talking about the importance of vacations for first responders. And at the end of the article, it talked about the fact that there were no real programs for children of first responders that the author was aware of. And I thought, well, I can change that. So we hosted what we understand to be the first in the nation day camp for children of first responders that was facilitated by a trauma-informed therapist who specializes in working with, in this particular case, teenagers. And it was a resounding success. For the kids to have an opportunity to go, oh, your mom does that? My dad does that same thing. And to understand that, yes, your families are unique. Nobody else has a code word that when dad says it and you're in a restaurant, you just pick up and go and you don't ask why, you just walk out the door. The other things that these kids endure, you know, often, you know, bullying is a huge problem just to begin with, but add the fact that your dad's a law enforcement officer or a corrections officer or a judge, that really amps up the dialogue. So we wanted to create that. We now have our second camp scheduled for Saturday, September 16th, and they will be ongoing. We've gotten some funding to help us with that. We need more funding to perpetuate the program. But again, this is something that we saw the need. We have the facility to do it. We're going to make that happen. The other thing that we implemented are what we call Colorado Puts First Responders First. It is a series of initiatives to have an outside agency, our nonprofit, tackle problems that there are recognizable solutions for. One, for example, is there need to be regional daycare facilities for first responder families. The cost of childcare in Colorado, as in any other place nationwide, is astronomical. Couple that with you have people working graveyard shifts, and all of a sudden it's 4 a.m. and you need to find somebody to go stay with your child because you're going to be at work for another 10 hours. It puts an unbelievable burden on family members, friends, just people in general. Like, how do I do that? And then oftentimes we get even more short-staffed because it's like, I can't leave my underage child alone. I have to go home. But to do it through a municipality, you have to get approval from city council. You have to get it from, and we thought, wait, no, let us tackle that. Let us find a private provider, pull together the funding for it, and then to create a facility where we can offer that. So that's one of the initiatives that we're working on. The second thing is, you know, we all know the jokes about cops and donuts. Well, the reality is there's nothing healthy to eat at 3 a.m. in a 7-Eleven or other convenience store. You know, so you're eating junk food, which we all know that what we eat affects the quality of our decisions and our energy levels. So we're looking to pilot a grab-and-go healthy meal program that is available starting with graveyard shifts, but then to be available in general, because there's scientific evidence that shows that if you go and walk for 20 to 25 minutes, you can drop your cortisol level and alleviate some of the stress that you're carrying around. And stress is what is killing first responders. I mean, you can only do this so long and expect your body to not keep score. We all know the book, The Body Keeps Score. Yeah, it does. And it's incredibly accurate. So as I learned about the statistics that, for example, law enforcement officers have their first heart attack, first, at 42. Their average age at death is 57. Their post-retirement survival rate is 5 years or less. Was talking with an EMS person the other day, and she was telling me that the average length that people stay in the job is now 2 to 4 years because they're burned out. There's a statistic that more than 50% of emergency department physicians are in what we call the crispy critter stage of burnout. They're fried. So when we look at these, there's things that we need to do, and we can't put the onus on the agencies to do this. They're, in many cases, they're hamstrung. So this is where I thought, well, wait a second. I'm a private citizen. I can say and do things that fire chiefs, police chiefs, other people can't do. So let us go be the little ninjas and make that happen. The physical training that, you know, okay, yeah, we got a gym. Uh-huh. You got a treadmill and weights. That's great. How does that prepare you to leap over walls? How does that prepare you to have to be in some of the situations? So the third initiative that we're looking at are creating American Ninja Warrior style gyms where they can actually go in and train on how to do some of these crazy maneuvers that they are called upon to do in their service. That, where do you go to train for that? I don't know, you know, so let's create that. And then the most recent initiative, because, you know, Lord knows I don't have enough to do, is to create housing supplements for people that we're recruiting from out of state to come work in Colorado. So to be able to create a stipend, because if you do it through an agency, the people who have worked at that agency for 20 years are like, you never gave me any housing help. You never gave me a signing bonus. You never did anything for me. It creates resentment within the department. However, if we as Restoration Ranch Colorado can come in and say, hey, we're going after federal funding dollars to be able to provide housing subsidies to new people coming to Colorado to fill those vacancies. And we're doing it through our agency. It kind of gives the departments a pass to say, we're not doing it, they're doing it. So those are the big fish that we're going after right now and doing some what we think are very unique and innovative programs. And then, of course, we have our Valor Vacations program, which is really the first program. As I explained earlier, I couldn't get to Maine. I couldn't go spend time at our house. So that opportunity actually ended up going to a West Metro fire family because the police chief at the time did not want there to be any conflict of interest with Chris's case and the department. And now the Valor Vacations program, which people can donate time at their vacation rental properties, so be it a commercial resort or a private person who has an Airbnb, VRBO, they donate time at the property to our Valor Vacations program. We have a nomination process where agencies set up a nominating committee, and those nominations are for meritorious service, post-traumatic or work-related stress, families of fallen first responders, or compassionate use. Then we have an impartial selection committee of two ex-police chiefs, the head of the Colorado Fire Service, the former head of 911, and me. And then we award those vacations. We are giving away 18 of them where the time at the vacation rental property is at no cost to the recipient. And then starting in September, we're kind of expanding that program where we will take some of the other vacation properties that are donated and create another wing of the program where people donate the time. We then offer it to anyone who is a first responder or their families at a discounted rate. So that becomes a source of revenue to keep us up and running, but it also provides discounted vacation opportunities to first responders, because who doesn't like having a little extra money in their wallet at the end of the month?
This episode is made possible by Cover, an all-natural military-grade mineral sunscreen lotion. Providing broad-spectrum protection in an SPF 30, Cover blocks 97% of harmful UVA and UVB rays, but is light enough to allow your skin to breathe. First responders often spend long hours in the sun, and prolonged skin exposure is one of the hazards of the job. First responders love Cover because it won't stain clothing, and the 4-ounce bottle fits easily into a backpack or go bag. Go to kovr.respondertv.com to get 15% off all Cover sunscreen products. That's kovr.respondertv.com.
So much proactive initiatives you've got going on to address some of the things that you've identified in your I guess just exploration of what are, you know, what are the challenges facing first responders. And you've definitely, you know, pulled back the curtain where I think most civilians would never have any awareness of these things. So I really salute you for doing all that and taking steps, doing things that are actually going to make a difference. That's, you know, in my mind, that's an amazing thing. And it makes me curious, let's say the ranch, if someone is to use the ranch, you know, as a one night or a getaway, what can they expect? What does that look like in terms of the experience they're going to have?
That is a great question. And thank you for asking that, because first of all, you do not have to be nominated to come to Restoration Ranch, Colorado. So anyone can come. They basically contact us at visit@restorationranchcolorado.com. Kat Patterson, who I mentioned earlier, and we'll circle back to Kat's story because it's pretty interesting. She handles our reservations at the moment. And so people can come up, they can spend a day, a couple of days. We currently have 2 bedrooms and 2 bathrooms that are available, and the main lodge. You can see I'm in the main lodge right now. It's pretty nice accommodations. We give priority to anyone who is involved in a critical incident and needs an opportunity to get away. We understand how difficult those can be, especially if it's a high profile case where, you know, they're under a lot of scrutiny and they don't particularly want to have the media up their front door. People have to sign a waiver, an NDA, to come here. We do our very best to keep the location private so that we can keep our first responders safe. That was something I had no idea about. I was talking about the concept of the ranch before I actually did it with a member of command staff at Lakewood PD. And he said, you know, Catherine, that's a great idea, but how are you going to keep my guys safe? I'm like, what are you talking about? And he says, how do I know that someone isn't going to follow them to your property and murder them? And my jaw dropped. I said, what? I never would have thought of that. And he said, yep. And we have to think about that 24/7, 365. I was blown away. So we obviously have security measures in place. It is a secluded location, but that is a concern for people. That's one reason why there is only one guest or family or group here at a time. We don't allow multiple people. So there are 40 acres for people to kind of wander around and have to themselves. I had somebody up last weekend and they said, you know, this doesn't exist because like I love to go camping, but I'm always next to the guy at the next campsite who's drunk at 2 a.m. and singing at the top of his lungs. And it's like the only thing that's singing out here are the coyotes. So I'm like, yeah, kind of different. And they're like, there's nothing like this. And I'm like, yeah, we understand that. That's the reason that we created it. So again, my goal is to have a respite facility in every state in the United States. Now, I keep on playing Powerball and Mega Millions, but so far I haven't won. But believe me, when I do, that's what I'm using the money for. I will never tell anybody that I won. But, you know, if I start buying properties all over the United States, you'll kind of figure that out. But, you know, we're also looking to collaborate with other ranches, other resorts to be able to say, hey, come under our umbrella and we can discuss how to do this collaboratively. Because it's really not about having to own every piece of property. It's about the network and the mission and how we reach out to people and have them understand what we're doing. I recently had our board president attend a fundraiser, and she was speaking with someone about what we're doing. And there was, you know, a potential donor who was interested, and she's like, is this woman doing it to make herself rich? And I thought, isn't that an interesting question? No. I'm not. That is not my motivation in starting a nonprofit. My motivation, as I stated earlier, is to say thank you to the tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of first responders, particularly in rural areas that are incredibly underserved. And when you go on a call in a rural location, more likely than not, the person you're going to tend to is somebody that you know personally. It's a friend. It's a colleague. It's somebody that works in the grocery store in your town. And these are primarily volunteer agencies. So they don't have the level of sophistication of programs to help them process this trauma and to work through what they're going through. So again, if I were able to change one thing, I would require citizens to take a class in what it means to be a first responder. Because until you dial 911 and hear that 911, where's the location of your emergency? You have no concept of how many people are working on your behalf to keep you safe, get you where you need to go for treatment. And we're oblivious to it. I mean, this is I get angry at myself because until Chris's tragedy, I had no idea. And I'm a highly educated woman. So I was like, wait a second, if I don't know this, 99% of the people on the planet don't know this. And there's kind of, I remember talking with Dan McCaskey, who's the former police chief at Lakewood. And we were in a staff meeting, or it was a meeting about Restoration Ranch and what we were trying to pull together. And I looked at him and I said, can I speak to you bluntly? And he kind of gave me the look like, do I have a choice? And I said, you do a really crappy job of explaining to the public what you do and why you do it. And he said, I know. And I went, well, if you know, why don't you change it? And it's like, I can't. There are things I can and cannot say as chief. And I said, well, I have a big mouth. Use me. And so that was kind of what started this whole advocacy, because I didn't know. And the more I learned, the angrier I got, because it's like, wait a second, why don't we know this? And now, again, to watch any event that happens on the news that's a traumatic event and people are screaming for, give us the names, tell us, you know, and it's like, you don't understand, they can't. Because if you do, then someone like me would find out her husband was killed watching the news, and the devastation that would cause the family emotionally is, you can't even comprehend it. It took me a year to be able to watch the footage of Chris's demise. And it gave me comfort because I saw that his head was facing forward. He never saw it coming. But if I had known he knew what was happening, and I learned about that from watching the 5 o'clock news or the 4 o'clock news or the 10 o'clock news, because it's on 24/7 now, that would have ripped me apart. So I think that that's something that we have to think about and educate the public as well, is your right to know does not trump a victim's right to privacy and to be able to process that information without seeing it plastered all over the news. And I realize, yes, this is a controversial issue, but I'm saying from my point, and I refuse to call myself a victim, I'm a survivor. And I am unusual. I mean, I had people from the victims advocacy come to me and say, hey, we have these programs and you can come and talk. And I was like, I will never be there. And they were like, what? I was like, no. I said, because I have had more than my fair share of dealing with trauma in my lifetime. I'm the only surviving member of my family. I've lost 7 family members. I've lost a best friend. So when people say, Catherine, you're handling your grief really well, I've had plenty of experience. I've also dealt with PTSD. I happened to work in Belfast, Northern Ireland in the mid-1980s when the IRA detonated 2,000 pounds of gelignite across the street from the office building I was working in. And we didn't know what that was in the mid-80s. You know, it was just like, okay, you're doing really weird things. Like when I came back to New York where I was living and would get in the subway and the doors would close, I couldn't breathe and I would start screaming to get let off the train. I didn't understand that my brain had an injury. And so I was fortunate enough to have sought therapy and to have used EMDR, brain spotting, you know, all the things, talk therapy, tapping. I mean, it's like, you know, people don't understand, like when I start tapping my wrist and doing things like that, hello, I recognize I'm having a stress response and I need to like calm my vagal nervous system and just do the toolbox that I have at my disposal. But many first responders are either reluctant or unaware that there are proven things that work. So I'd like to hear from you guys about how can we get this message out and remove the stigma? You know, it takes courage to say, I have a problem. It is not a sign of weakness. And yet so many people and agencies that I'm working with are like, you know, suck it up, buttercup. It's just part of the job. No, it's not. And if the statistics that we know about first responders were prevalent in any other group of work in the United States, oh my gosh, the furor that would happen about, oh my God, you know, you become an X and this is what's going to happen to you. We wouldn't put up with it, but yet we kind of just sweep it under the carpet with our first responder community and don't acknowledge it and don't talk about it. So I would love to hear your thoughts about that.
Well, before answering that, I have to commend you. You are one of the most inspiring people that I've ever met. And I really mean that. To hear what you're able to do with your trauma to help others, I believe that you and Chris are helping others and you're on this path together. And I just can't say enough about you and being at the ranch. It is such a special place. There's such a peace and calm there. I probably had 40 or 50 hummingbirds around my head throughout the entire visit. It is so incredible. And, you know, part of our mission here was to let people know what you're doing. And by listening to this, by watching this, someone's going to have a spark. For every 100 sparks that you've had and shared only a slice with us, this will spark other people to do the same work. That's why we do the podcast. That's why we're trying to break the stigma every single day. So David and I make the people we know sick because we talk about this podcast all the time. We barrage them on our social media about stigmas and suicide rates because we feel as passionate as you for our own reasons. And we can't put our head on our pillow at night if we don't feel like we're doing enough. So you're incredibly inspiring. And even if one person listens to this and says, you know what, I'm going to get in touch with her. I want to know how to do that where I live. Look at how much change could happen. So I wanted to say that to you. And I think we all own that responsibility of breaking the stigma, you know, so any first responder we know, letting them know that it's okay, ask them how they are. If you have a cousin who's a cop somewhere, ask them, hey, how's it going at work for you? You never know what one question will do for people. Because when they're sitting on something and trying to hide it, it might just come flooding out.
When somebody says, I'm fine, I heard what that really stands for. Fine means those are feelings I'm not expressing. And I thought, oh, touche. You know, when the whole, I'm fine. Yeah, no, you're not. So you're absolutely correct. And I really want, one of the things you mentioned about the ranch is the serenity that's here. Part of the work that I do is called intentional design. And so everything that we do at the ranch is designed to create a feeling of safety, of relaxation, and of sanctuary. And so that's what my whole design expertise is around. And so when people walk in here, they don't know, but there are literally hundreds of words written on the walls behind the paint that first responders asked us to put there. And so they're covered over, you can't see them, but they're still here and people feel that. And people will walk in. The biggest compliment I got was when a first responder walked in here, he goes, oh my God, I feel like I'm at home. And I was like, that's exactly what we want you to feel like. And to watch families come here, I had a mom come into to the lodge and I was fixing dinner for her and she was crying and I was like, what do you need? Because I've learned like, oh my God, don't ask what's wrong because, you know, that's like, you know, and I said, what do you need? And she's like, I don't need anything. I'm like, okay. And she's like, she said, I'm crying because I haven't seen my husband this relaxed in a decade and I don't know what to do with it. And I was like, oh, okay. We're doing what we need to do. And one other thing that I wanted to talk about was I wrote a blog post months ago after talking with a number of first responders, and I'd love to hear your response to what I wrote, which is, don't call me a hero. Because when I was talking with first responders and I said, you know, how do you feel about being called a hero? Universally, the response was, we hate it. And I was like, why? And they were like, you are asking and ascribing us to a standard of behavior that is unsustainable. And if we feel that we have to be heroes, we can't be human. And it was gobsmacked me. And I said, what do you want people to say then? Thank you. That's all we want. Thank you. Are you finding that too?
Yes, very much.
Okay. I think we all face that over and over again. We've literally had debates about it in designing an event, entitling the event, and you know whether or not to use the word heroes for first responders, and we just chose not to because it's a difficult. I think most first responders are humble in that they really want to be of service to their fellow human beings, and you know they're not doing it for those kind of you know almost like worshipful accolades. Okay. It's more, you know, we're here to serve, and thank you is sufficient. You know that works for us. Catherine, there's so many more places I know we could go with this conversation, and we got to kind of wrap it up, but. You know, I just wanted to say that, you know, to your question, as far as, you know, what we think some of the answers are, like Bonnie says, like one conversation at a time, we can make the changes. But more importantly, you touched on something where I think the public only understands a small fraction of what the first responder community is like and what it experiences, how we do our work. And a lot of times to express thanks, they think of food and they bring food to a fire station, police station, EMS agency. And while it's wonderful and well-intentioned, it's really not going to, you know, heal people or, you know, there's so many more things out there that you've now tapped into with your work that are going to be much more meaningful and powerful and transformative. So, you know, keep doing what you're doing. It's incredibly inspiring. And I want to thank you for being with us and sharing everything today.
You're welcome. It was really delightful to be here. And I hope that we can further this conversation and really make more people aware, not only of your podcast and the great work that you're doing, but the opportunities that there are to be of service to the first responder community.
Well, you're such a blessing, Catherine, and my gears are already turning. You and I share a little bit of the same DNA, I think, but my gears are already turning as to future things that we could do together. So thank you.
We have a wonderful website, which is www.restorationranchcolorado.com. We have a Facebook page, we have an Instagram page, and we'll be doing a lot more in the future. So yeah, just check out our website. And if you're interested in contacting me directly, my email is ksa@restorationranchcolorado.com.
Thanks for all you're doing, and look forward to hearing more about as your projects unfold and evolve. Looking forward to hearing more about how they're spreading and taking root and changing lives. So it's been great having you on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Remember to like and subscribe our YouTube channel, Responder Resilience. We're on Facebook, Responder Wellness Inc., and Responder TV, VBSRadio.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all the podcast platforms. And for past episodes and guest information, go to ResponderTV.com. Until the next time, stay safe, be kind to yourself. Take care.